And you just listened to Bird Note, and this is 88.5 KRFY, and we're back live in the studio for an extra special interview. It's a timely matter that we'll be talking about. We have coming up this Saturday at in Sandpoint a climate strike event. But I'm here, I'm Susie Prez, and I'm here with Jean Girth. Good morning, Jean.
Good morning, Susie.
And we've got a lot to talk about in the fact that this Friday, we are set to demonstrate across the globe, demanding action on climate crisis. So why don't you tell us about that? What is the climate strike about, and why is it happening? What's this climate crisis?
Well, the aim of the global climate strike is to draw attention to the emergency climate crisis and to create pressure on politicians, the media, and the fossil fuel industry. And that's from the 350.org website, which is, they've been devoted to bringing the climate crisis to the attention of the world, really. So this Friday, I think this began with Greta Thunberg.
Good enough.
No, nobody can pronounce her name. When she started going to the Swedish parliament on Fridays because she wanted to draw attention to it, their attention to it, and that turned into Fridays for Future, which was students walking out of classes on Fridays, and then this particular Friday has been targeted for a global strike. The students have initiated it, but they're inviting adults.
And just to put that in perspective, Greta Thunberg is a 16-year-old, at this time, Swedish student child, young adult, I guess is a better way of saying it. And she started this a year ago, maybe. But it was really, I listened to an interview that she did, and it really came out of nothing was being done, but the science was there to speak to the fact that we're putting too much CO2 in the atmosphere at a rate that doesn't account for a future.
Right. It's not sustainable.
Not sustainable. Okay. I just want to say before we go too far that at the end of this interview, we have a recorded interview that you had the opportunity to do with Bill McKibben. Why don't you tell us who he is so that people can stay for that interview?
Bill McKibben's the founder of 350.org. The name 350 comes from science. 350 is a measurement of carbon dioxide in the atmosphere. So it's 350 parts per million. That's the level that's considered sustainable for human civilization. We're currently above 400. I'm not sure exact. It's 402, 410, 410, something like that. Not sustainable. So unfortunately, we're not going to be bringing that down for a long time, but we can stop it from going up more. So Bill McKibben has been, he's a journalist. He's been called the country's leading environmentalist. In 1988, 3 decades ago? Yeah. He wrote The End of Nature, which was really the first book that for the common audience about global warming. Since then, he's written a dozen books. He's received at least as many awards, and he's currently the Schumann Distinguished Scholar in Environmental Studies at Middlebury College, Vermont.
One of the things that I wanted to ask you, so we're going to hear an interview with him that you had the opportunity, which is pretty cool to do.
It was very cool.
Yeah, and that's very insightful. But when we talk about climate crisis, we're still at a point where, as you say, we can maybe slow this down and turn it around. But where are we at in this crisis right now? And how important is this global climate strike to bring attention to the need to do something?
Well, we no longer talk about climate change in the future. It's here. We know it's here. If you live on the coast or in Florida, I think you have more tangible evidence. But we have evidence from the wildfires and the smoke. And unfortunately, the predictions that's not going to go away. We're going to have more fire and smoke. So locally, that's one of the impacts that we have to deal with. There's been, over the years, there's been demonstrations throughout the world There was one in 2009 that 350, I think that was about when 350.org started. It was 5,200 demonstrations in 181 countries. And in 2014, the People's Climate March in New York City turned out over 300,000 people. So this climate strike is one in a series. There's going to be more. I'm sure that this isn't going to solve the problem. But it builds momentum. It builds awareness. It builds, I think, it inspires people to get out and do something. And so when I talked to Bill, that was one of my questions. Like, how does this strike compare to past events?
So that was kind of one of my questions. What do you hope this event in Sandpoint? And let's just talk about that for a minute, because we're going to hear the interview with him at the end. But so Saturday, the 21st, it will be in Sandpoint. And it's like bringing awareness to this at any point in time is important. This around the world, the global climate strike is Friday, but this is happening in Sandpoint.
On Saturday. This really is a grassroots occurrence. 350 Sandpoint really didn't even initiate this, but we're helping. There's been several individuals who stepped up and said, I think we need to do something, and decided that Saturday was the better day for Sandpoint, which I agree with. I don't, until the kids are really well organized, it's hard to walk out of school on a Friday. So Saturday, we hope to see a lot of kids, a lot of youth at the strike. And I hope that Saturday is going to be a chance for all of us to be inspired by each other and a chance to talk to each other and also go away with a renewed commitment to do more. Most people who are even listening to this are probably aware of the climate crisis and doing something, but we need to do more. And maybe we can talk more about that after the interview, just maybe some specific things that can happen locally, but the slogan for the strike is, our house is on fire. Let's act like it. We demand climate justice for everyone.
Yeah, what would you do if your house was on fire?
I sure wouldn't be walling it off saying, mm-hmm. Oh, it's only happening in that room. I'm mm-hmm. not going to worry about my living room because this is only happening in the kitchen.
Right. To bring this into perspective, when you're talking about students being able to walk out of school, and it is happening on a Friday intentionally around the globe at noon, I think. In New York City, the city is allowing all the students to strike without any repercussions. And that's 1.1 million students in New York City. And I think one of the things that impressed me listening to an interview with Greta Thunberg on Democracy Now! A while back was how much everything she says is based on science. She even said that she has scientists proof all of her work before she speaks, her speeches or whatever she gives. And so this, as you said, this is no longer an if, it is a yes, it is now, and it's based on science. Do you have anything you want to say about that? No. Okay.
No, I mean, we're really beyond debating this, and if people choose to believe in science or understand that the science is real, that's great. There's some people who just need more education, I think, to understand that this is really happening. And I would like to talk about that more after we okay. have Bill on, about just the ramifications of that for the individual.
So, should we listen to the interview?
Yes.
Okay, why don't you give it a little introduction and I'll get it going.
Well, this is Bill McKibben, founder of 350.org. We talked to him last week. He's very knowledgeable, and he's just written a book called Falter, which I would certainly recommend, especially if you need to know more about the science and be able to connect the dots to see that the climate crisis is real.
So please enjoy this interview with Bill McKibben that Gene Girth had the opportunity to record. We'll be back after the interview to continue the conversation with a bit more information.
I'm on the phone with Bill McKibben. Good morning, Bill.
Hello there. How are you?
Oh, we're great today, and we really appreciate your time, and I'm excited to talk with you and connect our listeners to the global aspect of this strike. You've been involved in other global climate demonstrations. Can you tell us how does the global climate strike compare to your past marches and demonstrations? And have you had indications that an increasing number of people are willing to demand climate action?
Yeah, I think this is pretty likely to be the biggest day of climate action yet. This movement has been building steadily now for a decade, and we've had some big, massive days of protest around the world before. But happily, as the demand, as the danger rises, so too does people's willingness to be engaged. And so it looks like this is going to be a big, big day of action on every continent. I was on the phone today with our leaders in Africa and Latin America and those low-lying Pacific islands that may disappear in the next few decades. And every place people are geared up to strike in one way or another on September 20th.
Yes, I've been hearing about it from a lot of different sources, and it's so nice to be connected to those people who are actually going to be impacted first and hardest and are being impacted already by climate change.
Yes. You know, the iron law of climate change is the less you did to cause it, the quicker you suffer. And, you know, you really get a sense of that looking at things like those pictures out of the Bahamas where, you know, the island's just lawnmowered by the hurricane last week. You know, and these are poor people living in shacks who took it the hardest, as is always the case.
Yes, we don't have to read the scientific papers anymore. We can watch the news.
Yeah, that's the problem. You know, this week marks the 30th anniversary of the book I published, the first book on climate change, really, called The End of Nature. It came out in 1989, and at the time we were offering warnings, and now we're offering kind of bulletins from the front line.
So with this strike, what outcome do you hope to see from this global demonstration?
I think the main goal is to just keep increasing pressure on leaders to actually stand up to the fossil fuel industry. That's been the heart of this fight for three decades. It's not that we've lacked ideas on what to do. We've known for decades that there should be a price on carbon, that we should be quickly building out renewable energy, that we should be keeping coal and gas and oil in the ground. We just haven't done it because of the enormous political power of the fossil fuel industry. They've obviously utilized that power in an all-out kind of propaganda effort for three decades now. That effort's, I think, beginning to flag. The polling shows that more and more and more Americans and people around the world understand the nature of the problem and understand the need to move quickly. But, you know, in a world in which money really talks, if we're going to drown out the speaking power of money, we're going to have to shout pretty loudly. So September 20th is another day in that shouting process.
And we need millions and millions of people to do that.
Oh, there will be millions of people. That I have no doubt. We need as many of them as is possible. You know, I think back sometimes to the first Earth Day in this country when I was nine in 1970, and the apparently 20 million Americans were in the streets that first Earth Day. That was 1 in 10 of the then population of the U.S., and that turned out to be enough. You know, within a matter of a year or two, Richard Nixon, who was by no means an environmentalist, had signed into place the Clean Air Act, the Clean Water Act, the Endangered Species Act, you know, on and on and on and on. And it's because really he had no choice. People had mobilized in large enough numbers. So, you know, maybe 10% is the goal we need to be shooting for. We won't get there this Friday, but we're going to keep doing this kind of work for the next few years while we still have some opening. The frightening thing about climate change, of course, is that it's a timed test, and we don't have forever to work on this. If we don't win soon, we won't win, and that's what lends it this air of slightly desperate urgency.
It's been keeping me focused, yes.
Yes.
and that.
Me too.
Yeah, thank you, and thank you for three decades plus of work.
Yeah.
The area served by this radio station is rural and politically very conservative. We've had some great success in building consensus across ideological lines through projects that speak to common local values. We've been doing our work, but nothing seems to happen as fast as we need it to. Do you have any advice for those of us who want to impact climate policies locally in a rural, politically conservative area?
You know, I've lived my life in rural parts of America, too, both red and blue. And in some ways, it's harder. In some ways, of course, there's certain ways in which it's easier because people in rural places tend to realize more what's going on. They're less insulated than, you know, suburbanites or something. But there is also this, we live in this crazy ideological age. I don't ever completely understand it. People who think of themselves as conservative should be the most concerned about climate change, because we never thought up anything as radical as what we're doing now. I mean, changing the atmospheric composition of the one planet we've got, that's pretty radical. We're now melted half the summer sea ice in the Arctic over the course of the last three decades. The pH of the ocean's grown 30% more acidic. You know, those are radical, radical changes. And those of us who are fighting to forestall them, I think are, I think we're actually, in any real sense of the word, conservative. You know, we're asking for a world sort of like the one we were born into, with some ice on the top and the bottom, the odd coral reef in between, with a forest fire season that doesn't stretch all year round, you know, so on and so forth. My sense is that people in the American West are starting to grow more alarmed, in no small part because of the siege of smoke that keeps drifting every summer over so much of the West. But yeah, it's not coming fast enough.
Well, that's certainly been our circumstance. I think the smoke and the wildfires have been a good focus. And I am going to start calling myself a conservative. Thank you for that idea.
There you go.
Yeah. We have just 2 minutes left, but I've been reading your new book, Falter, and I wondered if you could just give us, at the end, you talk about two tools that we have, one being solar panels and one being nonviolence. Could you speak to
the price of a solar panel has dropped 90% in the last decade. The engineers have done their job. This is now the cheapest way to generate power on most of the planet. That's a good thing. It gives us an opening that we could take if we wanted to. The reason we're not is mostly the enormous power of the fossil fuel industry. To stand up to it, the technology we need most is the nonviolent social movement. You know, the stuff that was pioneered in the 20th century by people like Dr. King. And they showed us how the small but many can stand up to the ruthless and few and mighty. That's our job, and we don't know how it's going to come out. This is still an open question. The science is really tough. We waited a very long time to get started. We're obviously not going to stop global warming. We may be able to stop it short of cutting civilization off at the knees. That's our challenge right now.
Well, thank you so much. I feel like I have my marching orders. We're going to go out and do what we can do here. And
absolutely.
Looking.
Thank you for your good work here in one of the most beautiful corners of the whole world.
Oh, glad you recognized that. Thank you, Bill.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
And that was an interview facilitated by Gene Gerth with Bill McKibben, the head of the 350.org, a global climate activist group. And Gene, this could almost be overwhelming information. What can we do here in Sandpoint?
It is certainly overwhelming. I have come over the last 5 years to understand and realize that I think one of the most important things that you can do to stay involved in this is to take care of yourself. It's emotionally, the impact is huge. And there are resources that I will have on the website, on the 350 Sandpoint website soon, some really good talks from psychologists about ways to hold this that gives hope and nurtures hope. I think it's also really difficult for people to talk to their kids about this, and there's some advice in this one podcast about that. We're going to be holding, as 350 Sandpoint, we're going to start publicizing that more and try to facilitate having some groups that can look at some of this material. I think it has to be done in groups. We have to share this. And that empowers us to go on with the more tangible actions. There's a lot you can do locally.
What's coming up?
The conservation groups that are in town, like you just...
Well, I'm talking about for the climate strike. You wanted to mention that again.
Once again, yes. It's on Saturday at 1 p.m. We're going to be at the east end of Farm and Park. So that's near Jeff Jones Square, if you know what that is. It's the intersection of 3rd and 2nd and Main. Mm-hmm. And so that will start at 1. And then because this is our grassroots efforts and people started building on it, at 2 o'clock, Wild Idaho Rising Tide is going to have an action about a protest against the fact that the Coast Guard accepted an environmental assessment for the second BNSF bridge, where there had been a lot of input asking for a full environmental impact statement, which would mean that a lot more of the details would have to come to surface before they were given the go-ahead to make that bridge. So that will be, first at 1, there'll be the gathering in Farm and Park, and then at 2, there'll be this bridge protest, or the EA protest, as they're calling it.
And I'm thinking, you know, you talk about not being overwhelmed so that you can get informed. And I do know that the more that we're informed, the more, if you feel supported, you can act and you can make decisions and you can keep getting yourself informed and stay active. And really, that is an important part. So getting informed, you have stuff on the website at 350sandpoint.org.
Yes, it's not up yet, but okay. Well, it's on Facebook. I'll get it so it's more obvious on
but
the website.
There's hope. I mean, not as Bill McKibben said, this is crucial. We have to move forward to maintain life on this planet. But I remember seeing a movie recently called Ice on Fire, and it may sound kind of scary, but it wasn't. It was a great movie put out by Leonardo DiCaprio. Do you want to say anything about that movie?
It gives a lot of science, and it gives a lot of solutions. And human beings can innovate their way out of a lot of tough spots, and we have to count on that innovation, and we have to count on having the population demand that we use those innovations. And that's the political part of it, because we can do things as individuals, but in addition to that, we need to revamp the energy infrastructure and the transportation systems, and that has to involve government. Here's a quote from Bill McKibben that I liked, which is, climate change is far advanced. No one knows if it's possible to fundamentally alter our trajectory, but no one knows it's impossible either.
And wouldn't we rather be part of trying?
I am. Mm-hmm. I would be depressed if I didn't try. So
so again, the event on Saturday is on the 21st.
21st, Saturday the 21st, 1 p.m., Farm and Park, followed by a 2 p.m., Wild Idaho Rising Tide event. And when you asked before, too, about what can we do locally, there are so many conservation groups in Sandpoint, it's hard to list them all, but you just interviewed one of them, the Kinnexu Land Trust. There's Idaho Conservation League, there's Rock Creek Alliance. It's crucial that we conserve what we have. This area has a lot to conserve, land and clean water. There's also other things that can be done in the planning process, there's a lot of data from federal agencies out there that needs to be pulled together. And this is local. I mean, they're talking about Bonner County. They have data about what has happened in terms of temperature rise, what that impact has been, and how we can use that to plan. And that gets us right to the political involvement, which is talking to our city and county officials that we need to do this. We need to plan for smoke and wildfire. We need to plan, have planning at every level that takes into account what we know, what our best guess is, it's what's going to happen in the future. So I would encourage people to pay attention to the local politics, pay attention to the state politics. We now have a governor who understands that climate change is real. We need to be talking to him about that. And of course, get out and vote and encourage other people to vote.
Be involved, be educated, be informed, be involved. I think of the word responsible. We're responsible, folks. This is a big deal. Anyways, thank you, Jean Girth, so much for coming in. That climate strike here in Sandpoint is Saturday the 21st at 1 p.m. on the east side of Farman Park. And you had something else you wanted to say?
One other thing is that you can sign up for 350 Sandpoint at our website, which is just 350sandpoint.org. And mostly what we're sending out are emails to keep people up to date.
Sounds good. Thank you so much again for coming in. And we're going to go out with a song, and you can enjoy Otto's Eclectic Mix all day long until 5 o'clock, because that's what we play here at KRFY, an eclectic mix of great music. And this is listener-supported commercial-free community radio for North Idaho. So thank you for joining us this morning for a long morning of interviews. We're going to go out with Joe Cocker, The River's Rising. Thanks for listening.